Well, new things to tell you. I don't have all that many new things to tell you about, but at the end there is going to be something new and incomplete, and maybe some of you can help me make it more complete. Okay, so the goal of my talk is to present an alternative to inflation, which is based on holographic thermodynamics. So this is not ADS-CFT holography, but it's holographic scaling of thermodynamic quantities in a particular space-time. And I'll consider the space-time to be 3 plus 1 dimensions. So that's going to be the bottom line. And I would like to have been able to present you a new realization of this idea. Specifically, what I'm looking for is a system in which the specific heat capacity in a volume of radius r is proportional to r squared, not r cubed. So the realization that I will present to you is this string gas cosmology model, where this holographic scaling of thermodynamic quantities was used to provide an alternative to inflation in this work. Now, some of you have heard me talk about string gas cosmology before. So for those of you, I will give you a little homework exercise. The homework exercise is the following. Let's assume that 2 years from now, we have the following set of data. Okay, data number one is the Planck satellite shows us that there's a line in the sky across which the temperature of the microwave background jumps by an amount which exceeds the limit which Mark Wyman derived for cosmic strings, assuming a standard scaling solution. So data number one. So a line discontinuity in the microwave background maps with delta T over T greater than about 3 times 10 to the -6. Okay, that's one data set. Second data set is LIGO finds a burst of gravitational waves coming from exactly the same direction as this line discontinuity. Okay, so my claim, the claim that I would make in Stanford to Andre Linder, is that this rules out inflation. Okay, now this is not going to be a rock solid conclusion, and so your homework problem during the time that I'm presenting old stuff is to find a way to save inflation given that data. But later on in this model, I will actually present you a observational scenario which would rule out inflation completely. In fact, Andre Linder would have to give up on some of his cherished principles with which he attacks alternatives to inflation in order to make this compatible. And this other set of observational predictions is actually a prediction of the string gas cosmology model. Okay, good. So we all know that the current paradigm of early universe cosmology is the inflationary universe scenario. It is non-holographic. Inflation has been incredibly successful phenomenologically. So I don't think we've seen this beautiful data slide yet at this conference. So this is the data of 2000, but this is, wait a minute. This is a prediction of inflation as of 1985, 15 years before the data. So it's the angular power spectrum. Well, no, I'll mention the curve. I'm going to criticize inflation, Neil. So I like to be generous. Okay. So this is the angular power spectrum, so angular size, power, and inflation. So this, the black points are the data points, and the red curve is the prediction of simple inflationary universe models, assuming that you tune a certain number of parameters, about 6 parameters. I'll allow you to tune 6 parameters. However, inflation faces conceptual problems. And here's a partial list of these conceptual problems. First of all, no one has ever detected a scalar field, and inflation requires scalar fields. Then even if you have a scalar field, you need the right initial conditions. Even if you have the right initial conditions, generically you get the wrong amplitude of fluctuations. But I want to focus on these more conceptual problems, the transplanting problem, the singularity problem, and this applicability of general relativity issue. Okay, so the transplanting problem is the following. This is a space-time sketch of inflation. This is a period of exponential expansion of inflation, the post-inflation history. This is the Hubble radius. This is the physical wavelength of perturbations that we observe today. And the beauty of inflation, the success of inflation, is based on the fact that the exponential expansion of space makes this red curve start out at sub-Hubble scales and therefore allows a causal generation mechanism. But in most models of inflation, inflation lasts so long that all scales that we observe today start out much smaller than the Planck length at the beginning of inflation. And we all know that we don't understand physics in this region, but this region is crucial to the fluctuations. So therefore, we know that new physics must enter into the calculation of fluctuations. And it is, in fact, easy to construct toy models of Planck scale physics, which destroy the scale invariance of fluctuations. And to do that, all you have to do is you have to come up with Planck scale physics, which acts non-adiabatically compared to the wrong theory being scalar fields coupled to Einstein gravity. If you have this non-adiabatic evolution, then long wavelengths are amplified less than short wavelengths, and that gives you order one deviation from the usual predictions of inflation, order one deviation. Okay, so based on the work of Alex and Alvin Border, we know that scalar field-driven inflation is incomplete in the past. There's an initial singularity. Now, in model, scalar field models of inflation that give right amplitude of cosmic microwave background observations and which are not fine-tuned too much, you find that the energy scale at which inflation occurs is about 10 to the 16 GeV. Now, if you look back at Green, Schwarz, and Witten's textbook on string theory, you find that this is very close to their preferred string scale. Now, we know that at the string scale, the Einstein term in the effect of action is a very poor approximation to what goes on. So my claim is that eta is too close to M Planck to trust the predictions made using general relativity.
I
think we need to, we need the energy densities to be much lower than the Planck scale in order to be able to really trust the analysis of the background. I'm not talking about fluctuations here. No, it's the energy density. I'm interested in the background evolution. So this is a transplanting problem for the background. No. I'm comparing it with the string scale. I look up Green, Schwarz, and Witten, and I find that their preferred string scale is maybe 10 to the 17 GeV. And I will, Anyway.
Einstein action for curvature based, right? So that says it's the Hubble scale, that you should be compared to the string
scale, not the. Okay, but.
There certainly are potential problems where these run together.
So, anyway, there are zones of ignorance. You see here, I was generous to inflation. I drew inflation as being away from this large energy density zone of ignorance, but fluctuations definitely come out of this zone of ignorance. So hopefully you'll allow me to consider the possibility that there's an alternative for universe cosmology, which is based on new fundamental physics and which is different from inflation. And the question I will ask is, could this be based on holographic ideas? Holographic ideas in the sense that I mentioned before.
So are you going to break Lorentz invariance? I mean, my concern is the statement that the waves are subplanchian. I mean, that's based on some particular preferred slicing and some preferred set of modes that you like. So are you going to bring Lorentz invariance? I mean, that's kind of hard to see.
But I'm not,
I mean, there's no invariant quantity, which is
getting. I'm not getting the model that I present is not an inflationary model. I'm not going to break Lorentz invariance. Okay, so what I will do is I'll present you the string gas cosmology toy model. I'll show you how this gives rise to a non-inflationary model of structure formation. I'll show you that it makes testable predictions for cosmological observations. Specifically, it produces a blue tilt in the spectrum of gravitational waves. And if you find a blue tilt in the spectrum of gravitational waves, then inflation is ruled out. So inflation is definitely falsifying. So now, the idea of string gas cosmology, of this toy model, and I want to stress that it's a toy model, is to use new symmetries and new degrees of freedom, which are present in string theory, but not in field theory. So I will have to assume that space is compact, and you'll see where. So if space is compact, then for point particles, I only have momentum modes. Whereas if the fundamental objects are strings, then in addition to the center of mass motion, I have the oscillatory modes, and I can have winding modes. So the oscillatory modes and the winding modes are the new degrees of freedom, which are specifically due to string. So what I would be, the fact that this is a toy model comes, appears here. I'll be assuming that there's some classical background and matter is a gas of fundamental strings. So ideally, we would like string theory to describe everything, the background plus the matter. This is a toy model, which doesn't do that. And I'll be assuming space is compact. The new degrees of freedom are the oscillatory modes and the winding modes. And the important consequence that comes from the oscillatory modes is that string, a gas of strings in thermal equilibrium has a maximal temperature, the Hagedorn temperature. So if you take a box of fundamental strings, you compress it adiabatically, the temperature will never rise above a certain limit. The fact that there are string winding modes leads to a new symmetry, this T-duality symmetry, which is the following. So momentum modes on a compact space of radius r, their energies are quantized in units of 1 over r. Winding modes, their energies are quantized in units of r. So if you exchange r, if you let r go to 1 over r in string units, and at the same time you interchange momentum and winding quantum numbers, then the mass spectrum of string states is unchanged. It is a symmetry of the vertex operators. And if you assume that it's a symmetry of non-perturbative string theory, you get to the existence of D-brains. So these new degrees of freedom and this symmetry are going to be crucial. So let's first of all look at adiabatic considerations. So I'll take a gas of strings in a box of radius r, and I'll start this box large in thermal equilibrium, where all of the energy is in the light degrees of freedom, the momentum modes, and I'll gradually compress. Temperature will rise. But when the temperature approaches its limiting temperature, the energy will drift into the new degrees of freedom which can be excited, namely the oscillatory modes and the winding modes. And when r becomes smaller than 1 in string units, the energy will go into the light degree of freedom, the light degrees of freedom for small r, the winding modes, temperature will decrease. So this temperature. So you mean a torus, T3 or T9. But for simplicity, think about that. I need stable winding modes. So it's not as strict as requiring a torus. I will assume strings, and strings will play an important role. So if space is S2, then you will have not string gas cosmology, you'll be able to do something else, brain gas cosmology. Right. Yeah. Right. But then I will not be able to get the same structure formation mechanism to work. Okay. So now I just wanted to compare the point particle temperature radius curve with the string gas temperature radius curve. You see it's a crucial difference and particularly involves the issue of singularities. Okay. So now I want to put in dynamics. And I have two choices. I can either imagine in the spirit of the hot Big Bang model that I start near this equilibrium point, and then I gradually roll off. That's one set of initial conditions. Or else I can assume that I start very small here with some velocity, and then I go this way. So I don't have equations to show this. So there are two. So if I now look at the temperature time curve, then in this scenario where I start near the this metastable point, I will get this curve, the green curve, which looks like what George Ellis calls an emergent universe. If I start very small with velocity, then I get this curve, which looks like a bouncing temperature time curve. So this is what we should expect from string gas cosmology. And I will be assuming that we are on branch one. So I will be assuming that the scale factor as a function of time evolves this way. That we start in this Hagedorn phase, and we stay there for a long time. I don't mind if a long time in the past, the radius goes back up. I don't mind about that. But I need this to be long, at least 1 second. And this process, this transition, is the transition which is described by the annihilation of winding modes. So this process takes two string winding modes and produces string loops. It takes a system with the equation of state p equals 0 to p equals 1/3 rho. So this is a process that is determining this rollover.
So you're worried about the gene sensibility?
Yeah.
Okay. That's a very good question. Now the objects are relativistic. So if you have thermal equilibrium, then if indeed the objects are relativistic, then the gene's length should be bubble length. So you should not have any stability.
That's not quite the same thing. I mean, you're making an assumption that it's homogeneous, and that you can't motivate that by.
At the very end of the talk, I'm just going to exactly mention that that's a weak point, and I'll try to improve on it.
That's my biggest concern about
this idea. Right, and I actually agree.
Sorry, but how do we see that there is a phase in which A stays constant for a long time?
Okay, and now you see, if you try to use Einstein gravity, you certainly don't get that. But Einstein gravity is inconsistent with this whole set because it doesn't have a symmetry. Dilaton gravity does not give you that either, but also Dilaton gravity is not the right effective action to use. Now you're all mentioning the things that I'm most worried about. I'm most worried exactly about these two points. Together with Tsugumi Kanno and Andrew Frey, we did play around and ask the question, are there effective actions which could give us this? Now, what we can do is we can just start with Dilaton gravity and keep adding ingredients until we get what we want, and then we stop. But this is not exactly good science, and therefore I'm not going to present it.
So far, this is an assumption.
It's an assumption. Okay.
It's an issue of whether or not you are in an energy condition in the Einstein frame.
Yes.
Are you doing so?
You'll see that explicitly. The answer is yes. The high derivative of gravity. So if you have an effective action that gives us this, then you obviously have non-energy violation. And if you try to model this dynamics with adding matter, then it's the matter that will violate me.
But that's the hard thing to do.
That's a hard thing to do. But hopefully I've given you a motivation just from the symmetries that you should expect something like that to happen. And I would say that the symmetries that come from string theory are somewhat more powerful than ideas of effective actions that come from field theory. That's my hope.
So you mean just because A is dark, it's positive?
Yes. But we start with H equals zero, and then we get H dark.
You're also using S zero.
That's why I say that.
I mean, that's physical picture. There's no energy condition violation.
No. So, but you see, so in what I imagine, the matter will be completely consistent with the energy conditions, and it will be the graphics, which will give you effective graphics, not energy condition violation. Okay. So. For now, I want you to consider this as an assumption. This is my background. Good. Okay, now I want to mention some of the features of this factor. So first of all, if we were to start in non-spatial dimensions, all wrapped up with the same size, this unwinding can only happen in three spatial dimensions, assuming certain conditions. So they're covered this argument. So possibly there's a dynamical mechanism in which in string dance cosmology can explain the fact that in a theory of nine spatial dimensions, three become larger, six remain smaller. Now, even if you don't go that route, if you assume that the separation between three and six dimensions is intrinsic from the beginning, then you still have interesting aspects. Because these strings that wrap the extra dimensions, they will automatically stabilize most of the moduli. So for people working on inflation model building from string theory, you'll know that moduli stabilization is one of the key issues. And the claim here is that in string dance cosmology, the size and shape moduli are all automatically stabilized by the string dance. And the only modulus that you have trouble stabilizing is the limit. So the physics is the following. Winding modes prevent expansion of the extra dimensions. Momentum modes about the extra dimensions prevent contraction. Therefore, the effective potential that describes the radius of the extra dimensions has a minimum and a finite value. And you can show that in heterotic string theory, where there are enhanced symmetry states, which contain both momentum and winding numbers, which are masses at the minimum radius, then the potential that the radion potential that determines that goes into the equations for our physical three dimensions is zero. So size moduli are stabilized in Einstein gravity, at least in heterotic string theory. Yes, at late times I must get back to R.
Late time, you mean when you start the traditional unit phase?
Yeah. So this is a consideration that I'm going to use in the radiation dominant phase.
Ah, okay.
But yes. Okay. Now, similarly, the gas of strings, the interaction of a momentum and winding modes will stabilize a shape moduli, at least the one that we've studied.
So we are only discussing tori as our background, so we can put in a non-vanishing angle in the torus, in a true torus, theta. And then we can discuss the evolution, the equation of motion for this angle theta. And we find that this angle theta performs oscillations about theta equals 90 degrees, and that the expansion of our three spatial dimensions stabilizes this theta. So then the one remaining modulus is a dilaton, and there we have to use the same kind of tricks that are being used in string inflation model building. So in work with Andrew and Rebecca, who are both here, we've used Gugino condensation to stabilize a dilaton. And we've shown that this dilaton stabilization does not mess up the stabilization of the other moduli. So these are sort of features of the background. Okay, with the shape moduli, I can't give you the answer. The size moduli, we've studied that. Okay, so you're worried about whether the size moduli stabilization is consistent with fifth force constraints and overclosure. And the answer is it's consistent. But let's talk about. If I have time at the end, I have something prepared on that. Okay. So now I want to tell you where the holographic scaling in string gas cosmology comes from. So the general formalism that we use, we write the partition function in terms of the sum over the states, e to the minus beta Hamiltonian. You get the free energy and the action. Okay. And so from the partition function, we can determine the energy momentum tensor and the expectation value of the energy momentum tensor. So see, it's always derivatives of the partition function which enter. And what we are going to be interested in is expectation values of fluctuations of the energy momentum tensor. So that's going to be important for the cosmological perturbations. So the energy density correlation function and the off-diagonal pressure correlation function. So this is the energy density correlation function, and it involves the derivative with respect to the temperature of the partition function. Whereas if you go back and look at the IJ components, the IJ components will involve the derivative with respect to something like the radius of the partition function. So the starting point is the partition function, and to get the quantities which will enter into cosmological fluctuations in gravitational waves, I'll need the energy density two-point function and the off-diagonal pressure two-point function. The energy density two-point function involves the derivative with respect to temperature. The off-diagonal pressure perturbation involves the derivative with respect to radius. And that will be important for the prediction of string gas cosmology. Okay. So you see here you have a derivative with respect to radius. So this is a general formalism. So now we apply this formalism to a gas of strings in the Hagedorn phase. So the entropy is given in terms of the density of states. The density of states is a Laplace transform of the partition function. If we do the Laplace transform of the partition function, the partition function has poles at values of the temperature which are higher than the Hagedorn temperature. And in the Hagedorn phase, it's the pole closest to the Hagedorn temperature which plays a crucial role. So you find, in fact, it's Deo, Jain, and Tan who found this back in 1992. The density of states has this exponential dependence on energy and volume, but then it has this contribution, the correction that comes from this closest pole to the Hagedorn temperature. And this contribution has this form where the distance of the pole to the Hagedorn temperature is given by 1 over r squared. So it's this scaling which is going to be crucial. Okay, so this is the entropy. And the correlation functions that I will need are given in terms of derivatives of the entropy. So I'm not going to bore you too much with formulas. I'm almost finished now. So the entropy, logarithm of this. So now I take the temperature derivative, and I get this scaling of the specific heat capacity. And I take the derivative with respect to radius, and I get this correlation function. And both of these scale holographically. So the specific heat capacity goes as r squared, not as r cubed. Yes. That's just the other one just gives a constant. Okay. So now the other, so this is the holographic scaling. And the holographic scaling is going to give you basic scaling bounds of the fluctuations of energy, of the scalar cosmological perturbations and the tensor cosmological perturbations. Now, when I talk about the tilt, it's this factor which is going to be important. So now I go back. You see that this factor 1 minus temperature divided by Hagedorn temperature, which is very small if you're in the Hagedorn phase, it enters differently in the specific heat capacity, which will be important for the scalar metric fluctuations, and in the off-diagonal energy momentum perturbations, which are relevant for gravitational waves. And this is the thing that's going to give you the red tilt for scalar metric perturbations, and this is going to give you the blue tilt for gravitational waves. And again, let me go back to, you see that taking different derivatives of this gives you, in one case, this goes down into the denominator, and in the other case, it stays in the numerator. Yeah. No, there's nothing new. Okay, the concern, yeah. That's supposed to be the radius of the hole. Yeah, yeah, that's right. That's right. So this is something that I was very worried about when I was doing this collaboration with Batra and Nayeri. And for some reason, they were not worried about this at all. Now, I only have the best I can do is I can give a pseudo argument. So the pseudo argument is the following. The crucial thing, okay, the problem is, you see, this thermodynamic arguments, it was the thermodynamics of an entire box, not of a subbox. But I'm applying it to subboxes of an entire space. So now, what's crucial to give this holographic scaling is the fact that I have winding strings. In a full box, they have periodic boundary conditions. In a subbox, they have non-periodic boundary conditions. So therefore, since it's only an issue of boundary conditions, I hope that the basic results will hold. Okay. No, everything is compact.
No, I'm compact, 6 small, 3 large.
There's a T9.
T9 is T6 cross T3 with different gradient.
It shouldn't be hard to do it with free boundary conditions.
It's
just free strings. I think it's easy.
Right, you're an expert on that, so
it's quite doable.
But do you share my expectation?
Yeah, I think it's probably likely.
Okay, good. So this is now the thermodynamics. So now let's go on and talk about how this thermodynamics gives rise. So this thermodynamics plus the assumption about the background gives you this alternative to inflation. Okay. Now, for most of you, I don't have to tell you about that. So we are going to calculate cosmological perturbations. Okay, so if we have the metric and matter, we expand about the blue stuff. The blue stuff is a homogeneous and isotropic background. We introduce space and time dependent metric perturbation and a space and time dependent matter perturbation, and the two are connected by the Einstein constraint equation. So there is only one degree of freedom, which is independent. So therefore, without doing any calculations, you know that the action that describes the linearized perturbations, so the action is quadratic in the perturbations, has the form of a free scalar field with a time dependent mass. It can be nothing else. So without any calculations, you know that if you plug this ansatz into the Einstein plus matter action, you expand to quadratic order in the perturbations, you will get this. You just don't know what exactly the canonically normalized perturbation field is, and you don't know the exact time dependence of the mass. And to answer those two questions, you have to do the grueling but straightforward calculation. And you find that the variable which has canonical form is the Sasaki-Mukhanov variable, this combination of matter and metric perturbation, and Z effectively is the scale factor, except if the equation of state of the background changes. So once you have the action of perturbations, you can derive the equation of motion in Fourier space, and you find that on wavelengths smaller than the Hubble radius, the fluctuations oscillate,
because this term dominates over this. Whereas on super Hubble scales, where this is smaller than this, the fluctuations are frozen. No more oscillations, Vk is proportional to the scale factor. So now to supplement this equation of motion, you need initial conditions. And in inflation, we have good reasons to choose vacuum initial conditions, Fourier mode by Fourier mode. So this last thing will not be true in string gas cosmology. Okay. So this was a brief review of the theory of cosmological perturbations. So now I will compare what happens in inflation and in string gas cosmology. So this is a space-time diagram of inflation, time, space, Hubble radius, the wavelength of the fluctuations. So now in inflation, if you start with some classical junk at the beginning of inflation, this classical junk will be redshifted. And so therefore, you have good reasons to assume that perturbations originate as quantum vacuum fluctuations. So therefore, indeed, you will use this initial condition together with this equation of motion. However, if you have this background, string gas cosmology background, this gives you a very different space-time diagram, time, space, Hubble radius. You see the universe is static in the Hagedorn phase, so the Hubble radius is infinite. The Hubble radius exists. An aside on the Trans-Planckian problem, let's go back to inflation. If you take our current Hubble radius, you take it back to the gut scale, you find that this distance is about 1 millimeter, which is huge compared to the Planck scale. In string gas cosmology, the fluctuations remain at 1 millimeter. So if all we need to justify using linearized Einstein perturbation equations is the fact that the infrared limit of whatever describes the background reduces to Einstein. And I'll summarize the assumptions that I will actually be using in it. So this is a space-time diagram. The background. Yep. So first of all, I have this background, which I motivate from string theory. And then the string gas will provide the energy momentum tensor fluctuations. And you'll see that coming. OK. So perturbations are generated on sub-Hubble scales, where I can neglect metric perturbations and focus on the matter perturbations. They propagate for a long time on super Hubble scales. So if I generate a scale invariant spectrum here, then you will get acoustic oscillations in the microwave factor. Anyway, so the method, the three-step procedure which we adopt is the following. We will calculate matter correlation functions in the Hagedorn phase. Then for wavelength by wavelength, we will convert the matter fluctuations to metric fluctuations when the scale crosses the Hubble radius. At the time, t equals t sub I of k. And then I will evolve the metric fluctuations. This is a three-step procedure. OK. So now, how I will be using the Einstein constraint equations to relate matter perturbations to metric perturbations. So here's an ansatz for the metric, which includes both the scalar metric perturbations, the cosmological fluctuations, the things that couple to matter, and the gravitational waves. And if I plug that into the linearized Einstein equations, I will get these relations that determine the cosmological perturbations in terms of the energy density fluctuations and the gravitational waves in terms of the off-diagonal pressure perturbations. I'm not writing I not equal to J here. You should understand this I not equal to J. So we will calculate this in the Hagedorn phase. And at the time of Hubble radius crossing, use these equations to compute these quantities, and then we are done. Okay? So now, in contrast to, so let's go back to inflation again. So in inflation, we used vacuum initial conditions because classical junk is redshifted because space is expanding exponentially. In string gas cosmology, space is not expanding. Space is dominated by classical junk, the classical junk being the string gas. So the fluctuations that dominate in this phase are thermal string fluctuations. So it's these that we will calculate. Now, this is the general relation between the energy density fluctuations and the specific heat capacity. This is true for any thermal system. And now we will use the holographic scaling of the specific heat capacity, and then we get this, which is this result. And now we can calculate the power spectrum of cosmological perturbations. So phi is this cosmological perturbation, and pk of phi is defined to be k cubed phi of k power spectrum. So this is the thing that we calculate. Okay? So we use the Einstein constraint equation to replace phi of k by the energy density correlation function. We go to position space. So the energy density fluctuations in Fourier space become mass perturbations, become energy density perturbations in position space. Those are given by the specific heat capacity. The specific heat capacity had this form. So we plug these two equations into this, and we get this. So this is the final result for the power spectrum of cosmological perturbations. And you see that K has disappeared at first sight, which means that what we are getting is a scale invariant spectrum of cosmological fluctuations like inflation. Now, actually, what is this T? This is a temperature evaluated at the time where we've done the conversion between matter and mechanism, which means at the time when the perturbation is exiting the Hubble radius. So now, short wavelengths exit slightly later at a slightly lower temperature. So that gives a slight blue tilt of the spectrum, a slight red tilt of the spectrum, like for inflation. So up to this point, I've shown you that this string gas cosmology toy model, it reproduces a scale invariant power spectrum of cosmological perturbations with a slight red tilt. And if we go look at Green, Schwarz, and Witten's 1980s textbook on string theory, and we take their preferred value of the string length, the other quantity here is the Planck length, then we find an amplitude which fits the Kolbe normalization quite well. So at first glance, there's no amplitude problem in this model. So you see, this for each k, this T is a temperature evaluated at the time when the scale is crossing the Hubble radius. Now, short wavelengths exit the Hubble radius slightly later when the temperature is just very slightly lower. And so there. But roughly speaking, it's given by the string scale. So you have things given by the string scale here, Planck length here. So the amplitude is roughly Planck length divided by string length to the fourth power. That's fine. So the Planck length enters here. Now, see, if you go back to my curve, temperature radius, in a closed space, you never hit the hadron temperature. So you are right that this is maybe a very large factor, but it is not, there's no singularity in a closed space. Okay, it could be very large. So in this case, we have two free parameters. We have a string length as our first free parameter, and we have this factor as a second free parameter. But you see, we will have more than two observables. Yes. Yeah, so you see that what the power spectrum is defined in Fourier space, but it has a meaning in position space. The meaning in position space, it's the root mean. So P phi of K, the position space meaning, it's the root mean square mass perturbation in a region of radius K inverse. R is K inverse. Yes, exactly. Right, so this R is R of K equals K. Okay. So.
No, in a Hubble phase, I'm assuming some Hubble. Once the perturbations exit the Hubble radius, I don't need some Hubble anymore.
And then there will be a freeze out of these winding modes. So freeze out density of these winding
modes. Yes. And if there are still winding modes about all three dimensions, then you write another signature, namely a network of cosmic superstrings.
But that's entropy we given by the string scale.
Yes. So that now we have a fifth potential observable. We have two free parameters. We have five observables. So we have three consistency relations. That I was not going to talk about. This the network cosmic superstring is just because of time issues. But let me now go on and make the predictions. So the prediction concerned gravitational waves. So the gravitational wave power spectrum is given by the off-diagonal pressure perturbations. We already had the formula for the off-diagonal pressure perturbations in string gaps. The crucial fact is that this 1 minus 2 t sub h was in the numerator. And, well, this is the result. You get a scaling invariant spectrum of gravitational waves. But instead of a slight red tilt, you get a slight blue tilt. So this would be the prediction. And the magnitude of this blue tilt would be comparable in to the magnitude of the red tilt of the scalar modes. That's roughly one of the consistency relations. Okay.
So what is roughly the k dependence, the slight dependence on the momentum for both the scalar and the tensor?
Right. We can't calculate that because we don't have an effective action that describes the Hadamard phase. So therefore, I'm treating it as a free parameter. So,
but you know that it's red or blue,
yep.
just because of
yep.
the
right.
relation.
Right. And I also know a consistency relation which tells that the amount of redness of one is equal to the amount of blueness of the other. So phenomenologically, I could say, let's normalize this unknown by the red tilt that's been observed, or possibly been observed. Okay. So now, what do we require for this to work? We need the standard Cargillon tilts. And we need this to be more or less homogeneous at the level that I've described that comes back to Andy's objection. Then we need this holographic scaling of the specific heat capacity. And finally, we've used the fact that in the infrared, we can use the Einstein constraint equation. So these are the three crucial ingredients. So in principle, we don't need the specific picture of a string gas, which I was using. As long as some model of string theory will give us these three, we have this alternative. So we can always look at toy models. There's a specific high derivative toy model by Biswas, Mazumdar, and Siegel. And if you tune parameters in that model that you get a long bounce, then you can realize the string gas cosmology setup. But really, I would like to see something better. In gravity. Okay, so now you see, these are what I consider, these are my biggest concerns, and you see that the biggest concerns were already raised before. So we have no consistent effective field theory description. But this is not supposed to be field theory, it's supposed to be string theory, so maybe we shouldn't have an effective field theory. Keeping the metric flat during the Hagedorn phase seems a bit unrealistic, so that's your. Okay, so question is there an improved description of the Hagedorn phase? Now, there might be, but I haven't been able to work things out completely. So there is a very interesting paper by Veneziano back in December of 2003, a holographic cosmology where he's trying to produce a bounce in the pre-Big Bang model. So what he says is that the Hagedorn phase should be a P equals zero gas of string holes. And string holes of radius H inverse, H in the string frame. And a string hole is a black hole on the string correspondence curve, namely the mass given by string mass, string coupling constant of the minus two. So now a gas of such black holes satisfies Veneziano's cosmological entropy bound, which is this one. Now, these string holes will decay into radiated string states. So you can have a transition between P equals zero and P equals one third rho, like I was using. Now, what I would actually like to have derived is what I'd have to write as an assumption.
So if I now assume that deep in the Hagedorn phase, in Veneziano's Hagedorn phase, the Einstein frame scale factor is static, what I then find is that the dilaton increases, you get into strong coupling, and then once you are at strong coupling, the dilaton freezes out, and the decay of the string holes happens, and you get this space-time diagram, which is the same one that I showed before. And since the basic objects at Hubble scale are Hubble radius black holes, you get this holographic scale. Now, there are also ideas of Fischler and Banks and Fischler related to an early phase being black holes. And I also wonder if in this work by Banks and Fischler, one could get some this structural formation scenario to work. But unfortunately, I have not been able to work this out. So I think I'll leave you with this summary. Oh, no. No. I have one more small message. And this is now a complete aside. It's more related to the other approaches to holographic cosmology which we heard about, namely to try to resolve the singularity in a bouncing setup, like what we heard about from Schumit and from Ben. So if you manage to come up using ADS-CFT ideas, if you manage to construct a non-singular bouncing cosmology, there's another way to get scale invariant spectrum. And this is the so-called matter bounce. So this is this completely independent message which I have. So if some of you manage to construct a holographic cosmology based on ADS-CFT, then another way to get an alternative to inflation is via the matter bounce. And matter bounce is simply the scenario where you have a bouncing universe, and on scales which we are interested in today, they exited the Hubble radius in the past in a phase where the universe was matter dominated. And that's not an unrealistic assumption, because scales that we are probing today enter the Hubble radius mostly in the matter phase. So the fact that in a symmetric bounce, they automatically exited in a matter bounce. So now the statement is that if you have a matter bounce setup, then fluctuations which start out in their vacuum state on sub-Hubble scales in the contracting phase, they evolve into a scale invariant spectrum of fluctuations at late times. And this, so we set up fluctuations in their vacuum state here. They will evolve on super Hubble scales in the contracting phase. And the statement is that they then will become scale invariant at late times, provided the bounce is short on the scale of this wavelength. So that's a statement. This is a calculation, and the calculation is based on the following 6 points. You start with a vacuum spectrum, which is not scale invariant. In order to make it scale invariant, you need to boost infrared modes relative to ultraviolet modes. Now, infrared modes are outside the Hubble radius for longer than ultraviolet modes in this contracting phase. And in a contracting universe, the dominant mode of the curvature perturbations is growing. And so therefore, you have a natural mechanism that boosts infrared modes relative to ultraviolet modes. And now the quantitative statement is that exactly for modes that exit the Hubble radius in a matter-dominated phase of contraction, the boost of infrared modes relative to ultraviolet modes has the right form to turn the vacuum spectrum into a scaling invariant spectrum. So this is an independent message, which I thought I'd mention because there's been a lot of talk about ADS-CFT holographic cosmologies. But I'll go back now to the... Yes. Yes. Yep. Right. So that's a... That's right. Okay, so therefore I'll go back to string gas cosmology, and this is basically a summary. Maybe not, but at least to me it's interesting. So I hope to have shown you a toy model of cosmology based on some ideas of string theory, fundamental ideas of string theory. It has a chance of giving a non-singular cosmology. It gives rise to a new scenario of structure formation, which reproduces the successes of inflation. But it, in terms of the gravitational waves, it makes predictions which are different from the predictions of inflation. So therefore, it's also predictive. And if you indeed measure gravitational waves both in LIGO and on cosmological scales using the microwave background, and if you find that the tilt is actually blue, it will be great news for people who like string theory. Because it would be something that was first predicted from string theory. So the R, which is the ratio of the tensor to the scalar modes, is roughly 1 minus T over TH squared. So there's a slight run-in. So we are talking about something which is 10 to the minus 4. If we normalize by the observed tilt of the scalar modes. So just to give you a rough number. So anyway, it's not easy to find this, but it's possible. So thanks.
So having fought many, many years and struggled with the issues of starting inflation, whether the cost of that is worth what you get at the end, and all that kind of stuff, this, in your model, those issues get mapped onto the stability of the Hagedorn phase, the gravitational instability, the time it lasts, all that stuff, and the stuff you haven't worked out. So to me, these aren't just little technical details that hopefully will be worked out. It's like the whole challenge of having a theory of initial conditions, a dynamic theory of initial conditions of the universe, of the Big Bang, is tied up in those missing pieces. So I just want to comment. I don't feel it's just, well, here's a great plan and a few little technical things need to be worked out. It seems like the whole thing, which, by the way, I also feel about inflation.
This is why I was making the point that this is a toy model of cosmology based on some ideas of string theory. And so I think, to paraphrase what you're saying, there's a big step from taking this toy model and making it a real theory.
And it's the same. So for me, it's sort of the unsolved problems for inflation are the unsolved problems here. And it's not clear why string theory is going to help, but why your sort of wish list, why I should expect that to be more satisfying to wish for than the other struggles we're all having
together with theory. But you shouldn't think that because we've observed a scaling down spectrum of cosmological fluctuations with possibly a small red tilt, that therefore inflation is actually proven, which most people make that argument, unfortunately. There are other options, and it's been known since before inflation.
So I have two questions. First is, how come the Hagedorn phase is stops everywhere in the universe simultaneously? Or ends everywhere in the universe simultaneously?
Okay. Now, you see, this question is related to another question. Why do you have thermal equilibrium? You see, the way that I can answer this question is that I have...
I think that's the same question, because thermal equilibrium, I assume, is homogeneous, that's fine. But you say you also leave thermal equilibrium simultaneously everywhere, so that's even beyond that.
Well, with the genes instability, you can't even assume it's small genes.
But let's say we don't know anything about gravity before that, in the Hagedorn phase.
Now, you see, I don't think that's going to be, I don't think I'm using this assumption.
Well, you assume homogeneity, or rough approximate homogeneity.
See, when the perturbations exit the Hubble radius, I'm still in the Hagedorn phase. Maybe you're worried about possible entropy modes. I think what you're talking about is possible entropy modes, which would come about if you have a better description.
Another way to put it, Robert, is the three large dimensions grow because of a thermal fluctuation.
Yeah.
So why do they all grow at the same time everywhere in the universe?
Right. So there's a clock, and the clock will mean there's an entropy perturbation. So there's a possibility of having entropy perturbation.
Okay.
So I've frozen out the possibility.
So you don't have a solution to the horizon problem, essentially. You have to have a causal correlation.
Now see, if I have a long target on things, I don't have a horizon problem. But what I have is a size problem. The Hagedorn phase has to have spatial dimension of 1 millimeter. And that's much, much larger than the string scale. So in the context of a bouncing setup, that's not a problem. But in the context of an emergent universe scenario, it's a problem. But so I would say there's the size problem, but if you say that the size problem is solved by fiat, then the other problem is solved. No second horizon problem.
So your initial list of the problems for inflation, which ones are you solving?
The transplanting problem and the singularity
problem. Well, the singularity problem you're not really solving because not even transplanting, because everything is transplanted in your mode.
Yes.
Not even the equations.
No. So my perturbations, the wavelength of perturbations is 1 millimeter.
Yes.
I haven't solved the transplanting problem for the back.
Yeah, which also means that the ground is not really some nice geometry. It's not even clear that these 1 millimeter fluctuations are propagating on a geometric space. What do they do?
Okay, now you see, hopefully I didn't give you the impression that I say that this is a better model. This is,
well, that's,
fact,
I think,
you
what
see,
he meant
yes.
by solving.
Here you see my words.
Yes.
My words. So what I want to, I just want to remind you that inflation has conceptual problems. This has conceptual problems. And the nice thing is that data can distinguish between the two.
Yes,
I would say that, to be fair, it's not at the same level of problem in the sense that at the beginning you are postulating something that and you don't know how to write an equation even, so it's not the same level. No? I think, maybe my impression. I'm not saying, I'm just saying that, as you say, at the beginning there is no equation to write down. So.
You don't need to be generous either.
I think you.
Don't be so generous.
I'm not going to argue in light of time, but I think I would like to argue very strongly with you on this point. Uh-huh. I think symmetry principles are maybe more powerful than specific equations of motion. So I might use that argument to say that this is more or less.
You're saying that anyway. I don't know. What do you mean? If similarity principles are strong enough to have a solution,
that gave us the background. The symmetry principle tells me that this background that I'm using is what I expect.
Why?
Which symmetry principle? Homogeneity?
No. The symmetry principle, that's a schema. If I start at the symmetric point, I expect this to be long lived. Because I can roll off both directions, and if I put myself sufficiently close to the symmetric point, I should be able to live there for a long time.
But you don't know what sets the time scale.
That's right.
Does T-duality require the universe to be homogeneous?
No, but I'm really talking about the scale factor being constant in time for a while.
But you're also assuming homogeneity.
That's right, that's
but
let me
another
first,
way
let me first talk about the
yeah.
So anyway, so I'm not accepting your point.
Okay.
You have a right. I don't have strong arguments.
Okay, well that's something we can debate over the bank next time.